With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
It's 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall, where we debate the top 5 sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Hall. 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall starts now.
Did the Bears err in not trading for Baltimore kicker Kare Vedvik and letting him land with the division rival Minnesota Vikings? Is he a player that you will monitor? And what does their involvement say about the current kickers in camp?
Yeah, I think he's one of the players I'm going to monitor. I think that it's a pity they didn't get him. I think Kare Vedvik, if you're talking about a kicker that's going to be able to play 10 years in the league, and I think he's that good a player, that you're going to see him with the Vikings, and you're going to see him kicking a ball out of the end zone, and you're going to see him in that dome hitting a lot of field goals and a lot of field goals from distance. So the kid is a really good player, and he had a chance to study under Justin Tucker, who is a great kicker and is a total pro as a kicker. So I think that that kid's going to have a nice career for himself, and I think it's a boogeyman spot for the Bears, and I think it's just something you're going to worry about. I think you monitor it kind of like, you know, only if you have a problem. And I think what this underscores is maybe the kicker is not on the team. I think one of these kickers might end up being the guy on opening day, but I don't know that he's going to be the guy that lasts the whole year. So a little kind of worm in your mind where you're going to be thinking about this if Vedvik goes crazy and the Bears guy is no damn good. But as you broke it down, David, I don't know that they had enough to go get him. It's a difficult thing to do.
I don't either. Yeah.
But it seems like this is an all or nothing year, and you would like to have all prepared for, and I'm not sure they do.
It's a fair question to ask. Here we are, you know, almost mid-August, and we're still looking at the kicker situation being unsettled. It's only an error in judgment, I think, if you don't address it now. And because you're sort of this is an admission that you're not happy with the where things are. Yep. After bringing in 8 guys to audition, after settling on 2 to compete in training camp, you still feel like that's a void that you haven't filled adequately. And this is acknowledgement of that. So it's an error in judgment by Ryan Pace if you don't stay on this aggressive path. It was aggressive for the Bears. To me, even what they had left, they weren't going to offer higher than a 5th because they didn't have one. You're not going to go into – they don't have a third rounder next year either, Mully. They have 2 seconds, 2 sixths, a 5th, and a 7th.
Right.
So I don't know that they had the draft capital to make this deal get done to the extent that the Vikings were able to. I don't know if I can hold that against them necessarily because they were at least aggressively – pursuing this path. Now, there's some other guys out there that they can continue to aggressively pursue. The guy from the Colts kicked, Cole Hedlund is his name, and he's a backup to Adam Vinatieri. He was in Buffalo on Thursday night, had some extreme conditions with wind, and he booted a 44-yarder, a 42-yarder, and a 25-yarder. We saw Joey Sly kick a 55-yarder at Soldier Field. There are guys out there worth monitoring. You're always going to wonder when you see Vedvik compete for the Vikings how he would have translated at Soldier Field. But I don't know that you look at this as a missed opportunity, the one that got away, but the Bears still have time to pursue others and not let them get away in the same way.
The fact that this is the number one 5 at 5 question tells you all you need to know about if we'll be monitoring Vedvik or not, because we absolutely will, and especially seeing him twice a year and watching highlights every week. So I guess then the other question is, does Dan Bailey do anything for you? Because he was really good with the Cowboys and then stunk for the Vikings last year.
Good name, Espo. That's a good name.
Yeah, I mean, you got to look, and sometimes these kickers, I mean, Robbie Gould had an offseason the season before the Bears let him go, and now he's made, what, 81 of 84 or something ridiculous like that. And I saw this on Twitter just during the break. Undrafted free agent kickers that Baltimore has scouted and brought in and then Well, they've kept Justin Tucker. He was one of them. Will Lutz now with the Saints, and then Vedvik is the third on that list. So, hopefully,
Graham Gano.
Graham Gano as well. I mean, it's one of those things where it's like, well, are these guys doing a better job scouting kickers than we are? And if they
John Harbaugh was an old special teams coordinator for the Philadelphia Eagles. That's his background.
Espo, every team is doing a better job of scouting kickers than the Bears.
Not the Jets, because their kicker just retired after missing two extra points. Chandler Catanzaro, everybody.
He had a police escort off the field. I mean, obviously a huge error here. And, you know, if they had what Baltimore was looking for, if they didn't have what they were looking for, I don't know the exact details as of yet, but this is one of the perils of being so aggressive with trading away your draft capital, because it can come back and bite you in certain ways. I mean, it's easy to criticize Ryan Pace for not being able to identify a kicker one time throughout the entire tenure of his general managership here in Chicago, but he has used some of that draft capital to, you know, get the quarterback that he wanted, to get Khalil Mack, to get some other pieces, because it's hard to, you know, with the salary cap and with that limited amount of capital that you have, it's very difficult to build a well-rounded roster. And I think that he has built a reasonably well-rounded roster, but there is still this glaring omission here at the kicker position. And it looks like at this point it probably will be Fry or Pinheiro, which doesn't instill you with a ton of confidence. I feel like we're either at the same point we were at last season with Parkey, or maybe even worse, because Parkey had a little bit of a resume. A little bit. He was a guy that had kicked and had a little bit of success in the NFL before the Bears did give him that contract, whereas with Fry, who was most recently kicking in, I don't even remember the name. What was the name of this little organization?
The AAF.
The AAF, yes.
You love it.
Yeah.
I want more questions about it.
I was obsessed with it. I couldn't get enough.
But, Kevin, I hate to acknowledge the fact that that's an excellent point. I mean, they are more proven at kicker a year ago at this time than they are now.
And, right. And that's the sad thing about it, because we all know how that story ended. And at this point in camp, I don't know who else is going to be available. So you might be stuck with one of these guys unless something comes way out of left field and something falls into your lap. But this is brutal, absolutely, because this was kind of like the last-ditch effort that the Bears could have maybe pulled something out of their hat and filled this vacancy. They didn't do it. Obviously, we'll all be monitoring what he does with Minnesota. But, you know, to your guys' points also that you made, Baltimore has a great history of developing kickers here, so I think this is a coup for the Vikings.
Upon initially hearing this news, yeah, it does feel like the Bears did err, because you look at Vedvig's his preseason game, and he makes field goals of 55, 45, and 26 yards, and 29 yards, and he just looks great. And this is, you know, you think this is a guy, obviously, that the Bears could use and dump this whole kicking competition fiasco, but I can't truly say that they aired, because as you guys brought up, we don't know if this is just another casualty of making big moves in the season prior to get Khalil Mack and decimating how many future draft picks you have to deal. So I can't truly say that they aired. At least we know they were in the conversation. We just don't know if they have the draft capital to push it all the way forward. So I can't truly say that they did air. It's unfortunate, though, because not one of these guys has come ahead in this kicking competition to this point. I think we'd all feel more comfortable if one of the two looked way more solid than the other, and we had a front runner in this kicking competition, but we don't. So that's exactly what it says about their involvement. They're not sold on either one of these guys to this point, which is slightly disturbing to me. We still have time. And as we brought up last week, you know, there could be someone else out there that doesn't make a team, that is a decent kicker, that's better than both of these guys. So the Bears kicker might not even be on the roster, the one we see on opening day. Will Vedvik be a guy that we monitor? Hell yes. Yes, because this is a conversation we're still having. The kicker is one of the biggest double doink reason that the Bears did not advance in the postseason, and that's a position of need that has not been fulfilled, and we're going to be asking what if about this guy, unless the Bears get a guy that is just good as gold, for lack of a better term, and not Robbie Gold.
Well, I think that's a great question, and for us, it's pretty easy.
Matt Nagy explained Trey Burton's absence until his return Saturday by saying he was protecting Burton. He used the same word describing his approach to preseason games with David Montgomery. They are much different situations, but how are they related to Nagy's overall preseason plan?
Yeah, I think in the case of Trey Burton, you're always going to wonder how healthy he really is because he did miss more practice time than I think even he expected to when he indicated. So that bears monitoring a lot because of the offseason surgery and because of his recent past and missing the Eagles game with an injury nobody saw coming. So I think that obviously keeping him out is a precaution, and I think it's smart. And Matt Nagy did use the word protecting him when describing his approach. He used the same word with David Montgomery because I think David Montgomery sounds like the kind of guy that wants to be in every snap and every series, and he'll play special teams and he'll try to make tackles, and he will not kind of hold back because he doesn't know half speed. And you want that out of a rookie. You want that out of a guy who's going to be your featured back before all is said and done. But I think this does speak to the bigger picture here. Look, I am done worrying about how much the Bears play their guys in preseason. You can't fight City Hall. This is the new NFL. You may believe that preseason football, you know, you get better at football by playing football, but not today, not anymore. Coaches can but look at the injury risks and use them as a reason for holding their guys out, and that's okay. You have to accept it. The Bears have 3 weeks until the opener. I don't think that you're going to see any starters. I'd be surprised if you see Mitch Trubisky throw a pass the way that it sounds from Matt Nagy. I know Patrick Mahomes completed all four of his passes the other night, and he slid near the goal line and gave everybody a heart attack in Kansas City. I don't expect the Bears to take that risk. This is not a team trying to establish a mindset. It's different from last year. This is a team chasing a Super Bowl. You've got to keep everybody healthy. That is your number one priority this preseason. Everything you do until opening night will be with that in mind.
I think it's amusing that after we talked about Kerry Vedvik, you are talking about the number one guy we're monitoring. It's obviously the Kansas City quarterback, followed by maybe the Texans quarterback. And, you know, we got a few people on that list of guys you got to keep an eye on. But here it is. And to sum it all up, Matt Nagy talking about Trey Burton actually let the mask slip and said something that I think would resonate with all this conversation. Quite honestly, he finished his comments, I could care less about the preseason. He meant that about Trey Burton, but it applies to David Montgomery. Certainly applies to Mitch and to
Khalil Mack and Hicks.
Anybody you want to name. Everybody. The fact of the matter is, what we learned last year is that Matt Nagy, quite honestly, could care less about the preseason, and that is going to be the attitude. And as long as those guys are ready to line up on opening night, I don't think there's going to be anyone arguing about it.
Guys, I have zero problem with what Matt Nagy is doing, and I agree with him. There's no point getting anyone hurt. And I'll steal something I read in the Trib, I believe it was yesterday. I don't know if it was Dan or Rich, but whoever it says, get your bubble wrap out and wrap it around the Bears starters, because that's what's going to happen for the rest of the preseason. After the brief time that they played in the first game there, you're not going to see anybody. And you know what? I'm all for it, and especially Trey Burton coming back from the surgery that he's coming back from now with Anthony Miller with his ankle. Get him ready for Green Bay, and that's all that matters.
Well, what I'm sure Matt Nagy meant is that he couldn't care less about the preseason. That's a common misconception there. But
that's what he said.
Journalism
I could
major, right?
Care less.
Right, but
so.
But you know that's not what he meant.
I know what
if
you
he
mean.
Could
that's
care
awesome.
Less about
yeah,
it, then
right.
he could continue.
I love parsing yeah. football coaches.
Sure. I could not yeah. care less.
Far be it for me to be pedantic at 5:37 in the morning.
Can you diagram that sentence at the whiteboard, please?
I will come in during the break. Okay. I'll take care Thank of you. That. This is good because I also could not care less about the preseason. I'm already focused on opening night against Green Bay, where it will be a
not a season ticket holder, are we, Kevin?
No, absolutely okay. not a season ticket holder. I am a score producer. Let's keep that in mind at all times. I am singularly focused on the Green Bay Packers. I'm going to go Bill Belichick here. I'm on to Green Bay already. I'm not going to focus on the Giants or whatever else you're going to do in the preseason when we see a bunch of these guys that are either going to be on the practice squad or cut, or these two pathetic kickers that are going out for this job. You know, I'll be monitoring it, of course. I'll be monitoring a lot of things, but it's not going to be get your popcorn ready, you know, get all the boys together and watch preseason football. I'm completely over it, and I'm glad Matt Nagy shares that sentiment with me. The difference between Montgomery and Burton is quite different, but the goal is the same. Get them up to speed, keep them healthy for when it does matter, which will be opening night in Green Bay.
Although the difference between the situations of Trey Burton and David Montgomery are night and day, totally different situations. Yeah, that's it. Matt Nagy is not going to lose a key guy, a key player in one of these preseason games or during a preseason, you know, scrimmage or something of that sort. These windows in the NFL are so small, unless you're a team like the New England Patriots, that you can't afford to lose anybody in a preseason game. So whatever the situation may be, whether the guy is 100% healthy or a guy like Trey Burton who's recovering from a sports hernia surgery, it doesn't matter. I agree with what Matt Nagy's doing. I like his approach. Just keep everybody healthy till we get to week one. I am totally on board with that mindset.
Yeah, that's a great question, and it differs for every guy.
Is a split in Cincinnati sufficient for the Cubs, or are you disappointed? And when will they win a road series?
I'm disappointed. I don't think a split should be considered sufficient. I get it. 500 baseball in their division is fine. Everybody's playing around 500 baseball, right? So I kind of understand the idea. They had the big series at home, so they're 7-3 in their last 10, but they're 2-2 on the road again. They still haven't won a series, and it's frustrating. And I guess next up is Philadelphia, right? So this is your next opportunity. They may not win a series until they get to Pittsburgh, and then they may win a series and come home with that with the much vaunted and ballyhooed 500 record on the road for this trip. I don't think that should be considered sufficient. They've lost a game over the last four games from their lead. They were 3.5 and 3 games above their rivals, and now it's 2 and 2.5. It's not acceptable. You've got to play better on the road. You got to win a damn series on the road, and you need to start it right now. And it's confounding that it has taken this long for them to – that they're still in the throes of their failure to win a road series. Okay, going 500 is better than losing that series. Fair enough. But that's just not good enough. We got to have a higher standard.
It's been 11 series, so I understand the frustration. It's palpable among the Cubs fans. I think that's understandable. And so you look at what they were facing. They were down 3-0 with a chance to lose 3 out of 4 to the Reds, yep, in Cincinnati. And then, boy, I do think the conversation might have been a little different this morning. To me, I want to be consistent. I think that on this 10-game road trip, that given the way the Cubs have underperformed on the road, 5-5 is a successful trip. Now, you'd like it to be better than that. You'd like it to be your 7-3, as you pointed out. I just don't know if that was realistic, because everything that they're dealing with right now, not to make excuses, and I'm not going to go at the schedule actually favors them, gives them a little bit of rest going into Philadelphia. But look, they put Cishek on the shelf over the weekend to get some rest.
Right.
They're dealing with Kinsler being out. They have Kimbrel being out. They have a bullpen that is being pieced together with minor leaguers. You saw one of those guys who you didn't know much about earlier in the year, Rowan Wick, emerged yesterday as somebody who's in that circle of trust. So I think you have some bullpen issues that you still need to address. John Lester was a little bit better yesterday. Certainly wasn't terrible. Kyle Hendricks had a clunker. So you have some starting rotation issues that are starting to bubble up. All those things go together, and Chris Bryant comes through with a big hit. Chris Bryant gets a home run, the first one in 3 years in Cincinnati since his 3 home run night. So I think those are the kind of things you want to latch on to. Chris Bryant in the clutch, maybe this gets him going before he can carry the team for a little while. I'm not terribly disappointed with 2-2. I think you take it because of what you were staring at when it was 3-0, and you just didn't know. Boy, you didn't want to go into an off day having lost 3 out of 4 to the Reds.
And if you guys haven't heard it yet, the Tom Brenneman Reds radio broadcast of the Bryant home run is just fantastic.
It
I'm sure
classic.
Kepa will play it later.
Yeah.
But no, this is, you know what, David, I'm with you. 2-2 is nothing to write home about, but the way this Cubs team has played on the road, and especially when you've got half your bullpen out, more than half your bullpen out, I'll take 2-2, especially when you look at the way yesterday's game looked. It looked bad. It looked like they were going to lose that game. That seventh inning really saved them, and then the bullpen stepped up. And And really, Rowan Wick, I mean, a guy that, you know, you couldn't pick out of a lineup, you know, a few months ago. Now he's pitching huge innings for you. But certainly they have to be better. I don't know that they win a road series. I would certainly not predict that they win two of three in Philly. Pittsburgh over the weekend looks like a better shot, and then they come home after that. But they've got to do better down the stretch here if they want to do well heading into the playoffs.
You guys know I'm no Cub fan, but anytime Tom Brenneman is peeved, I think that's amusing to me. He can go kick rocks as far as I'm concerned. You know, the way the Cubs have been playing on the road this season, and we talk about the how bad that they've been away from Wrigley pretty much every day because it's been one of the big themes of the season. They are still just 23-35 away this season. So I think if you're able to manage a split like they did over the weekend, I think you have to look at that as an absolute win. I think in particular yesterday's game with the emergence of the bullpen, the fact that they went off 4-6 straight runs to close that game out. And David, like you brought up, Chris Bryant, who for some reason that I still can't wrap my head around, is still the bane of every Cubs fan's existence for whatever reason.
Isn't that crazy?
It's the most asinine, idiotic thing.
It really is.
Well, he's literally a top five player in all of baseball.
As
and
he
people
goes,
act
they
like
go.
He's a bum.
He really is. He is the key to anything they do. You know, he hits that three-run homer, and it was glorious because they win the game. Everything. Every time he has a good game, they win. And when he doesn't, that bothers people.
It does bother people quite a bit. You know what? I am going to go out on a limb here a little bit, and I'm going to say that they will take 2 out of 3 from the Phillies.
Nice.
On the road over the next. Well, they don't play today.
Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday.
Yeah. I think they win two of those games. It'll be the first road win for the Cubs since May, and I think that could maybe not turn their fortunes on the road, but I think in their own minds, you know, they have this hovering above them. And we can all see it. They can feel it. I'm sure they know how bad they've been on the road this season. They're asked about it constantly. They have to keep answering questions about it. But I think it could be a little bit of a mental relief if they are able to take 2 out of 3 from Philly, which I think they're going to do.
Well, Kevin, I hope you're right. When we launched into Cubs series preview mode last week on Thursday, I was one of the guys that said, yes, for this to be a successful road trip, they have to win 7 or at least
yep.
6. They have to. And sure, 500 would be a step above losing a road series as they have since May. But, time is of the essence here. I mean, I would take 500, you know, 2-2 in a series if it was June, even July. But I mean, this is August here. I mean, we're running out of games. We're running out of games. I mean, they have to start winning series on the road. They have to. And I hope Kev Bo's prediction is right. I mean, the starting rotation has carried this beleaguered bullpen the last few times through, and now we're starting to see some weak spots. The weakest link, John Lester. He, as you said, David, his outing over the weekend wasn't as bad as the one prior. But it wasn't spectacular. They need him to be spectacular. They need this whole starting rotation to be spectacular. Cole Hamels was roughed up the last time out. Hopefully on Wednesday he's back to being reliable Cole Hamels. They just have to. It's not sufficient to split and lose series anymore at this point, and it has to start in Philadelphia.
And I'm happy you're asking these questions.
A confident Joe Maddon said wins and losses will have nothing to do with the decision to bring him back, or else that would have been decided last season. Do you agree? And is Maddon right when he says he's optimistic he'll return for a couple more seasons?
I thought this was the biggest story of the weekend in Chicago sports. I thought when you had the Cubs manager, whose status has been the source of conversation all summer long, addressing it himself and addressing it honestly and openly, and I think with a degree of transparency that you rarely see, I'm here, all here for that discussion, because this continues to be, from my perspective, one of the biggest mysteries of the season. I have no idea, and I still understand why. And I think that we can have this discussion without getting – look, Joe Maddon does things every day to his lineup, to in game, that you can question, you can scrutinize, and you can pick apart. But overall, there's no way. I would challenge anybody to show me what you have to complain about. The culture he's created, the winning that he has experienced, and what he has done historically for this franchise. Why he doesn't have a contract right now for next season, baffling. baffling to me. I'll maintain it. They should have gone to him last year after the season, signed him to a two-year contract extension. I know what the price of managers is. I know that they don't want to pay that. I know that he's making $6 million a year, and they don't want to pay him $6 million next year to manage. So somewhere in between, they'll maybe come to an agreement. Maybe they won't. Joe seems to be optimistic. What this does is, it, as we talked about in the opening, Molly, it shifts the onus to Theo Epstein and Tom Ricketts. It shifts the pressure to them because publicly Joe has said, I want to be back. I want to win here. It's not about wins and losses. If it's not about wins and losses, what is it in professional sports? What are you saying there without saying it? So I think we always look at this from two points of view, what we think should happen and what we think will happen. What I think should happen, I just said. Joe Maddon should manage the Cubs for the next couple of years because I think he deserves that opportunity to come back and win again. What I think should happen is that. What I think will happen, boy, I would still be surprised if he's back. And I think the comments over the weekend underscore just how uncertain and mysterious this whole thing has been all season long.
CBS put together a list of the 30 most at-risk managers, guys whose jobs are most at risk, and Joe was sixth on that list. He had the sixth most job security out of all of MLB, and that means that a lot of people are getting fired is what that means. you know, Joe said that wins and losses have nothing to do with it because if that was the case, I would have signed a contract at the end of last season. But that's really interesting logic.
Well, it is because I think what he's referring to is the average number of victories. Well, certainly getting to the playoffs.
But that's not what they. That's not why he's under. That's why he doesn't have a contract extension. It's because they didn't win, because they didn't get. They lost the 163rd game and then they lost again. That's what it comes down to, and I don't know why. That I mean I understand his logic is, well, if it was about wins and losses, I don't worry about wins and losses. What wins and losses, they would have signed me last year because I won. But it's not about wins and losses. It's about playoffs. It's about what happens in the postseason. And I think Joe does a great job of deflecting pressure from the players, including the pressure of keeping the manager. And I think Joe does a great job of deflecting pressure on himself by saying it has nothing to do with wins and losses. But guess what? If it's not the wins and losses, if he didn't get an extension, then what's it have to do with success in the postseason? The guy is going to be judged based on the success in the postseason. That might be unfair, but there is a feeling that the relationship is coming to an end. Whether that's correct or not, that's been the overall feeling. And the fact that he doesn't have a contract tells you that there's something missing in their mind that he hasn't performed. What could it possibly be?
But if you're operating under those conditions, and I don't disagree with that, but and we'll get into this further because
right,
the postseason evaluation is that only a 2018 thing?
No,
because they have won in the postseason. They have won in the postseason under Joe Maddon. They did not win last year, okay, and they haven't won another World Series. That's on everybody to do that. But I think that just isolate on, okay, you didn't win in 2018, it's wins and losses, because, okay, so you're going to be gone.
Yeah.
Well, but David, yeah. there, by Joe's logic.
Be careful what you wish for.
By his own logic. And I'm not arguing with you. But you tell me. You think that relationship is going great and
no.
everything's fine and
no.
it's sunshine and balloons?
Obviously
and,
not.
Clearly.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he was their guy. And I will just say this. In the this is Maddon's fifth year. It's the greatest five-year stretch of Cubs baseball that any of us alive have ever seen. There might be five-year stretches
it's
back
a low
up.
Bar to clear.
I understand that. But, you know, going back
Sox
to the early 1900s or whatever, I'm sure there were a better five-year stretch than what we've had here. But 15, 16, 17, 18 this year has been the greatest five-year stretch of Cubs baseball that any of us has seen. Maddon was their guy. They went out and got him. They got rid of Ricky Renteria because Maddon became available. And I understand now this is, you know, year five of the Maddon thing, and there's obviously something there. He would have been re-signed. To me, what's logical, based on the success you've had with Joe as your manager, with all the intangibles that he brings, is that you would extend him through 2021 when all of these guys become free agents. You're obviously going to re-sign some of them. That makes sense to me, but I think, David, I agree with you that we should have seen that already if that was going to happen.
You know, sometimes I think Joe just likes to talk just to talk and just to kind of, you know, hold court and have, you know, all the sycophants out there in the room lapping it up and just kind of chuckling along. Joe, he's so funny, this guy. Oh, yeah, I like Simon and Garfunkel, too. Oh, look, he's talking about this now. He's he's being cute. And I think over the weekend, it was just Joe kind of speaking just to kind of fill the air. I don't really know if he's spot on here. He might be out to lunch. Who knows? I don't know. If wins and losses don't matter, then what are we doing here? And I get maybe he was making a distinction between regular season wins and losses and how successful they have been over the past 4 or 5 years in his tenure, and maybe how inconsistent they've been in the playoffs outside of 2016. So if he's optimistic, that's good. I don't know if the other side feels that way, because I do think it will come down to wins and losses, and not in the regular season. It's going to come down to what they do in the playoffs.
If the other side felt that way, we'd have a contract agreement by now.
Exactly. I think if there was that much mutual optimism, this wouldn't even be a conversation.
Yeah, we truly haven't had an outright vote of confidence that has killed this future of Joe Maddon conversation from the Cubs front office that's given us, you know, reason to not bring this up. So, of course, this is going to be a conversation. I halfway agree with Maddon. I don't think it's wins and losses that matter. I agree with that's what it's all about. World Series. It's World Series and bust. World Series or bust. Ever since 2016, the bar was raised to that level. I think the only reason Joe Maddon is still around, yes, he's gotten the Cubs to the postseason. Yes, despite, you know, being bumped out in the wild card game yesterday, they have returned to the postseason every year. And so it's World Series or bust. So if he's optimistic, in my mind, that means the Cubs have to get to the World Series for Joe Maddon to return. That's what I thought at the beginning of the season. I still think that. Nothing about this season has changed my mind about that. Nothing that we've heard from the Cubs front office has changed my mind about that. So if he's optimistic, then he better be optimistic about the Cubs making it to a World Series and winning it. And the way this Cubs team is playing on the road, it's really shaky and really iffy.
Wow, very tough question. Very, very hard.
The White Sox managed just 3 runs over 3 games with the A's. Is it all down to Yoan Moncada's absence? And how many players short are they going into next year?
Well, that's the problem. they're down a lot. And I don't think it's all down to Yoan Moncada. Would he help? Yeah. Maybe you don't get shut out in 2 or 3 games against the A's if you've got one of your best hitters available. They've got a lot of guys hurt, man. They've got a ton of guys that are down and a lot of guys that are out, and they have young players that haven't been brought up yet. So how many players are they down? Let's see. They're down Louis Robert. They're down Nick Madrigal. Those will be guys that are on the roster next year that you're not counting on right now. Don't forget Michael Kopech will be back next year, healthy, ready to go for the year. Carlos Rodon will return at some point in season. Dane Dunning is going to be back next year at some point. Does he go right to the major leagues? Does he have stuff to prove?
Can they hit?
How good is he? Well, this is where I was going. You know, Andrew Vaughn's another guy that maybe comes up and does something. The fact that we're talking about the number of rookies that, you know, I mean, Louis Robert comes up and starts in center field, period, end of story. And then they have to go out and get at least 2 outfielders. Because guess what? There's tons of good outfielders available. That's kind of the position available in free agency. And they're going to need some of them. Then they're going to need a pitcher. You go around the lineup, they don't have depth. They don't. Look at the guys that are playing right now for them, you know. No offense to Going and Skoll. It's just they're not very good right now. And they've got replacement level, non-replacement, negative replacement level players. So they, you know, we can rattle off the names. The reason everybody's waiting on some of these rookies is because they're going to be starting next year. They're going to be playing next year. We know who the second baseman is going to be, who the center fielder is going to be. We know who the third baseman and the shortstop are going to be. We know who the first baseman is going to be. We know who the catcher is going to be. We got an idea of what the rotation is going to look like. You need a new outfield, too.
Yep.
And you need some depth. And there's a lot of players.
Adam Engel accepts your apology
for
disparaging him and putting him in that group. Look, they're not hitting. And I think what happened over the weekend was sad to see, but not terribly hard to predict. This is an anemic offense without Yoan Moncada. You can't rely on Aloy to come through with a clutch homer, although it was cool to see him homer on bobblehead night, Aloy bobblehead night, and then he delivers a home run and sends the fans home happy.
That was great.
That was a highlight of the weekend for the White Sox. They did not hit. And the A's.
Field of Dreams, too.
And, the Field of Dreams on Friday night, that as well.
It was a highlight of my
Did you see what happened Saturday night at Golden Auctions in, I think, New Jersey? They sold a Luis Robert card.
$51,660.
Signed baseball card from that guy. Can he be here tomorrow? And can the White Sox give the Astros back A.J. Reed? Because they need something, and they need a lot. And I think Robert in the lineup would help. Moncada coming back would help. But they're not manufacturing runs. They're not scoring runs. They're not hitting home runs. They're not scoring at all. It's hard to watch.
Molly, I agree with you about the outfield and about the depth. But are you ready to DH Aloy already, or are you giving up on him and left?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I got to see who's available, but they need an outfield just because you're not. I mean, can you Schwarber him? Can you play him sometime and DH him? I'm just saying. I think that they still need outfielders. That outfield is.
Yeah, it's. I agree. Yeah, no, I'm agreeing with you. I was just curious as to your mindset when the Sox are in a contending mode. Is Aloy mixing and matching DHing and outfield? That's probably that's how I kind of imagine that would happen. I also think it's funny because a year ago everyone couldn't wait to get rid of Yoan Moncada and tell us all how bad that trade was, and now it's like, oh boy, they can't score because Yoan Moncada's not in the lineup. He's a big loss, but as you correctly pointed out, Mully, they're short a lot of areas there offensively.
Mully, our guy Josh Nelson on Twitter with some I use the term good statistics, but they're actually horrible statistics if you're looking at them from a White Sox perspective. In the second half, the Sox are last in home runs, last in walk rate, 29th in strikeout rate, last in isolated power, and last in weighted runs created plus. So by pretty much any measure, they have been the worst offense in baseball in the second half of the season. And I know they've had injuries, but every team has injuries. You can't just put it down to that. They need to get the better players in the minor leagues up here as soon as possible. They don't need to worry about the financial implications 7 or 8 years down the road. They need to spend in free agency. They need to be better at building this thing because these numbers are indicative of a organizational problem with offense and not just from a few players and not just caused from a few injuries, but this looks to be a very rotten issue from the core, and I think that needs to be the biggest thing addressed in the offseason.
Unfortunately, the answer is yes, it is because of Yoan Moncada's absence. I mean, the guy's having a turnaround a year, and you hate to see him go down with injury having this kind of year. But, I mean, that is what it is. You'd like to see guys step up. You'd like to see Tim Anderson step up. You know, you'd like to see Aloy step up in these situations when there are games, when there are no runs scored. But, hey, that's a tough staff, pitching staff to face. So it's like in the rebuilding state that the White Sox are in, it's understandable. Look, you guys pointed it out. The players are many players short going into next year. The outfield, if you want to just for the sake of argument, we'll keep Abreu at DH. You're missing half of an infield. You're missing two starting rotation pitchers because Ronaldo Lopez is starting to look like he's finally turning things around in this half of the season. So there's a lot missing here, but it's rebuilding time. It's rebuilding time, and these are the growing pains that you go through.
Fair enough. 312-644-6767. That is the telephone number. It's Mully and Haw at Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.